Good evening, dear ones, and welcome. How good it is to gather in wonder and possibility. So we join again in holy remembering as we explore the truths of Christianity, perhaps expressed in new and fresh ways. May a word of grace come to each of us, and may we have the ears to hear. So we begin in the name of God, Creator, Transcendent, God Omnipresent, and God Immanent, the Holy Living Trinity. Amen. So tonight I am especially delighted that our remembrance will be of someone that I get the pleasure of introducing is our speaker and our presenter this evening, and that is Peter, who will celebrate his birthday in a few days, and July 23rd, in fact. So I'm reminded of Peter's words and his article in the July Mark, when he says that July tends to invite pondering about the nature of freedom that is rarely understood, and that is one cannot be free without duty. Duty is the blood of freedom. Another way of saying is that freedom thrives on duty, but not just any kind of duty. Beyond following rules, expressed in the work of inner Christianity, is being duty. Peter goes on to say, such duty is the union of being and doing for the sake of others, for something larger than oneself, a once and an ongoing act of the will, a choice to be and to do for something or someone greater than yourself. Duty helps us focus our life energy, and in so doing, frees us from many other choices. Choice reveals being and creates useful friction. We should always bear in mind that freedom for something is also freedom from something. So thank you, Peter, for your inspiration as always, when we celebrate your life with gratitude. So now we prepare to celebrate life in all of its grandeur and mystery by just coming to this point in time and remembering that that in itself is a wondrous gift and mystery. To begin to see, to work on the side of knowledge and on the side of being. And we do this quietly, asking our heart to hear what it is for us at this time. This matters to our very selves, for one another, our work, and the world. So now we place ourselves with intention and immanent trust and receptivity to the influences coming from the circle of conscious humanity. And we prepare to be awake to them, to consciously receive them. With back upright, heart open, mind quiet, and directed attention, body relaxed, noticing perhaps and then releasing all tension, constriction, resistance. We breathe in deeply all every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that passed through us this day, our world today. Everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that brought heaviness, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than, everything. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy, all affirming, all denying. And we hold it as offering, reconciled as food for being. We lift it, ask that it all be transubstantiated in our being, as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God, as we ourselves are beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. I hand over all complexities. I hand over all plans. I hand over all anxieties and small fears of my heart. I open to the divine human life that is mine. I am here. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. And so it is. So now we prepare to enter into Lectio Divina. And our passage will again be read 3 times. Jesus said, I am the door. Anyone who enters through me will be saved and will enter in and find nourishing pasture, free from the prison of sleep, healed and made whole. Thus it is to be saved, fully alive and completed by the grace of God. This is a process, lifelong, not a one-time event. And thus it is that salvation is transformation, an ongoing process of being healed and made whole by working on oneself, working with and for others, and working with all creation. This process is a journey towards wholeness and fullness, what the work calls balance man, which is the first step on a continuing journey of human development, psychologically and spiritually. Let us seek knowledge for this transformation. Let us ask for a will unto transformation. Let us open to receive the grace of salvation. And thus it is to awaken to the fullness of life. Jesus said, "I am the door. Anyone who enters through me will be saved and will enter in and find nourishing pasture. Free from the prison of sleep, healed and made whole. Thus it is to be saved, fully alive and completed by the grace of God. This is a process, lifelong, not a one-time event. And thus it is that salvation is transformation, an ongoing process of being healed and made whole by working on oneself, working with and for others, and working with all creation. This process is a journey toward wholeness and fullness, what the work calls balance man, which is the first step on a continuing journey of human development, psychologically and spiritually. Let us seek knowledge for this transformation. Let us ask for a will unto transformation. Let us open to receive the grace of salvation. And thus it is to awaken to the fullness of life." Jesus said, "I am the door. Anyone who enters through me will be saved and will enter in and find nourishing pasture, free from the prison of sleep, healed and made whole. Thus it is to be saved, fully alive and completed by the grace of God. This is a process, lifelong, not a one-time event. And thus it is that salvation is transformation, an ongoing process of being healed and made whole by working on oneself, working with and for others, and working with all creation. This process is a journey toward wholeness and fullness, what the work calls balance man, which is the first step on a continuing journey of human development, psychologically and spiritually. Let us seek knowledge for this transformation. Let us ask for a will unto transformation. Let us open to receive the grace of salvation. And thus it is to awaken to the fullness of life. And so it is. So I invite you to share what you received from this passage. Kathleen, good evening.
Hi, Marianne.
Hello.
This is a perfect passage for me tonight because I have felt kind of confused, or maybe it's better just to say unfocused, that my spiritual work is unfocused. Mm-hmm. And I would like to blame that on the heat, but I'm not sure that's really what it is. It just seems like I'm not, I don't know, drilling down in the same way or something like that. But I love this one. Three things I got from this. It's a lifetime process. Yes. So if I'm a little vague for a couple of weeks, that's not the end of the world. And then at the end, when it said the will for transformation, that I can wish to have the will for transformation and being open to grace. And so I feel like if I have those two things, I have the foundation. And if I feel a little out of sorts or something, it's probably not a big deal. So
probably not, no. Thank you so much, Kathleen. Yeah. That's very encouraging for all of us. Thank you.
Oh, good. It was hopeful for me.
Yes. Marnie, welcome. It's good to see you. It's been a while.
Yes, it has. Hi, everybody. Glad to be with you tonight. Always my favorite night of the week. I heard Jesus's statement, I am the door. And today, one of our liturgical readings was from Exodus, the passage where Jesus says, or where God says, I am that I am. Mm-hmm. And of course, now as a work student, I hear that as being, as presence, existence. And so when I was trained in my youth to hear these I am statements of Jesus as references to him, but now I'm beginning to be able to hear them from the perspective of being, presence. That is the door that leads to the verdant pastures. And so I'm just deeply grateful for this work, for giving me this lens to read the scriptures. It opens in a whole new way, in a much deeper way than it ever has for me before. So I'm just grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Marnie. And that's what Maurice Nichols said too, that the work opens up the gospels and all of the scriptures. Yes. And
so absolutely. What a gift.
What a gift. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Hey, good evening. Welcome.
Hi. Hi, Marianne. The thing that first caught my attention was the image. And the moon was looking at the sun. And in my imagination, I thought maybe the moon was saying to the sun, how do I get to be like you? Maybe I have my cosmology a little screwed up here, but... And then the words that came to me from the reading were, salvation is transformation, an ongoing process of being healed and made whole, working on oneself. And so when the moon looks at the sun and says, how do I get to be like you? That's how you get to be, that's how you get to be the sun. So anyway, that's what landed with me. Thank you.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Gay. Someone else that would like to add to these joyful sharings? Ah, good. A man. Good evening, Jim. Thank you for standing up.
Of course.
So to speak.
It's a joy and a privilege to participate in this way. And the words that stood out to me were, it's a lifelong process. And how that landed for me was a sense of relief. I often feel a lot of impatience about my internal struggles and where I missed the mark and where the gap between where I am and where I think I could be with my psycho-spiritual development. And it just felt like just a burden coming off of me that it's just a natural thing that's going to take a lifetime. And as long as I pay attention and show up and have a sincere heart, God will take care of the rest. And so I just felt a lightness from those words. So thank you.
Wonderful. Hallelujah. Thank you, Jim. Rusty, how wonderful to have you with us. You have to unmute, Musty. Yes, there you go.
Am I good? Thus it is to the fullness of life. I don't know if I quite have that properly remembered, but boy, it just the phrase and just the mystery of that phrase. Thus it is to the fullness of life. And it just had a richness that I look forward to living with for the next, for the rest of my life. Thus it is.
Thus it is.
To the fullness of life. Thank you.
Thank you, Rusty. Amen to that. Sabrina, welcome.
Hi, Marianne. Thank you. Hi, everybody. I love the image, you know, the sun and the moon. It's beautiful. And the part of the passage that I really resonate with is this is a process, lifelong, not a one-time event. And it's so true. I've been trying to heal myself from trauma for ages. You know, I know that's not the real I, but it is a process. And I, at times, have been very impatient with myself, thinking, I mean, you know, why? Why can't I get this? You know, really deep stuff has come up lately, and I'm really grateful. And I love the centering prayer. It's like miraculous. So
it is indeed.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Sabrina. Thank you. It's good to have you here. Well, we have time for one tiny more. I know there's someone out there that has words right here. Ah, Alice, good evening.
Hi, Marianne. I love the image. It was just so beautiful. And as I saw the sun and the moon looking at each other, so to speak, I thought how true it is that for our cosmos, we have to have the sun and the moon to make our cosmos, our Earth, and our universe complete. And the other thing that caught my psyche is that the word salvation is transformation. And that just put it together for me, that the spiritual aspect of salvation and the work can go hand in hand.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Alice. And thank you to each of us who shared. You're part of a mosaic, and it fills in and expresses for all of us what you shared. And I'm very grateful. So now it is my joy to introduce Peter, and he will accompany us in tonight's sharings further and into the teaching of the evening. So good evening and welcome, Peter.
Thank you, Marianne. That was really meaningful sharing, and thank you for the sweet introduction. That touched my heart. So I'm just going to review the homework from last week and put it up on the screen just as a review, and then we can share our experience of the homework. Hopefully you can see that now. Okay. So the strivings is a big subject, obviously, very powerful part of the work and Gurdjieff's teachings, actually one of my favorite aspects of Gurdjieff's teachings. So the homework for this past week was to choose one of the strivings to work with intentionally and specifically, perhaps in a very small but practical way. And for those in the work who have been in the work a while, perhaps you may have felt only a need to focus on the fourth and fifth strivings, but the invitation was to work against this and practice the first, second, and third striving. So what did we discover? What strivings came to meet us and were drawn? What were we drawn to, and how did it land for us? I'll just open the floor for sharing now and see who would like to share about your experience of the strivings. Jeannie, please.
Hi, Peter. I focused on the first one, and what struck me in the writing about the first one was the idea of sensing when you have enough of something. And I've been attentive to when I'm eating, trying to be more mindful when I'm full. And I realized that also goes into the realm of knowing when I've given enough of myself and need to replenish. And it hit me today when I realized I didn't have, I was at the point of needing to be affirmed. And I looked back at that and I realized, oh, I didn't have enough rest. And so I was looking for this fulfillment outside of myself, affirmation from others. So that, it's been a very fruitful work for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeannie, for sharing and the courage to find your center up, not in others. Good for you. Tracy, please.
Good evening, Peter. I appreciated the homework and the study last week. I've not spent time with the strivings as a whole, not meaningfully. I think I've looked at them individually at different points, but just trying to really distill it and integrate it into my own being. So I did work with the first and second strivings on daily aims, but on the side of knowledge, I really worked with the strivings as a whole. And based on just my own reading and reflection, what I was feeling into is the fourth and fifth strivings for me felt like they should be at the front. And that, you know, all that we do is to pay for our rising, to recognize the magnificent gift of this life, and to remember that, and to make our contribution on this planet to pay for our rising, the suffering of our common father. And then the fifth striving to serve. And that was reminding me of the greatest commandment, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your being, and love your neighbor as yourself. And from this, all the other commandments flow. So I felt into that in the front, and then, you know, the other strivings just likewise fell into place. I care for this body. This is the gift I've been given. That as George Bennett said, you know, and I think we heard it from Robin Bloor last week, we can't progress at all on the journey without the body. And so the care and nourishment and feeding of the body with all the right influences and good food is very important. Our personal work, which is striving number two, and just more and more seeking of truth, metaphysical truth of the cosmos, of our place in the cosmos, of our creator, of all that's been given, unceasingly study and make efforts to broaden our understanding. So I appreciated that we spent time here this week, and I feel like I have something to keep.
Thank you for sharing. That's very comprehensive valuation that I'm hearing. Thank you, Tracy. Frank, please.
It so happens that I have, with my work partner, been working on, without knowing it, the second striving. I'm always involved as a beginner in trying to self-observe non-critically. What I've been doing in speaking to my work partner and in my daily work is to observe when I start to get into life and go off into life's lines. And, you know, at that point, give myself the first conscious shock and go back to the, you know, what this is all about, what I'm doing. So I relentlessly have been trying to pursue the practice of inner Christianity in that regard. Contemplation, I make sure I daily do it a couple of times and maybe another time. But they are the basics that have led me to a greater sense of peace and a feeling of humility.
Thank you, Frank. And I think it's a reminder to all of us to the gift of conscious shocks, or catching ourselves in the midst of being identified or going down a rabbit trail of a thought or emotion. There's a will there that's involved. It's so useful. Thank you. I'm going to go to Lisa Morgan now, please.
Hi, Peter. Happy birthday soon. I wanted to share that I was already working on the first striving before this became a homework assignment. One of the things I've learned very clearly is my mother just passed away, and the church was very supportive of that, and I appreciate that. But the only place for me to go was the body. And I've immersed myself in yoga just about every day. Mike and I are in North Carolina right now, so we've been doing a lot of mountain biking and yoga. And I've just realized how important it is to get into the body and allow the emotions to just flow and come out. I'm a 3 on the Enneagram, so I compartmentalize my emotions and the feeling. And so I try to put them off to the side until I'm ready to experience them. And the beauty of yoga has been that they have just flowed out. And it was necessary for that to happen. And then I've also allowed myself to get several massages and to just, you know, really nourish the body so that the emotional side can come out and I can mourn the loss and be grateful for the life that my mom had and grateful for my body for what it does for me. So
Yeah, thank you, Lisa. And our hearts are with you as you grieve your mom's death and the journey you've had with her, caring for her over the last several years in her transition. It's a reminder that the body can kind of fall out of view during midlife. You know, it's very much in view in childhood and as an infant. But then it's like we return to that as we die and age. We become little infants again that need so much care. So that's a great place to see that first driving. And bless you as you ride and do your downward dogs and cry and feel it all.
Thank you, Peter.
We miss you. Mary Leah, please.
Hey, Peter, and happy birthday, old man. The fourth striving's been on my mind. I have never really paid attention to the word pay. So pay for our arising and lessen the suffering of our common father, the notion of service and working for the glory of God, all that has been what I've always thought this one was about. But this week, the word pay really caught my attention. Pay for your arising. And I put that on and I have a wondering about what am I willing to pay? So I have a family situation that involves an estrangement from a beloved. And in wondering about what the path forward is and what is the will of God with the situation, it's come to my attention that I have to be very I have to be very strong-willed about what I'm willing to pay. So am I willing to give up being right? Am I willing to make that payment? Am I willing to deeply listen to the things that are needing to be said by the other? Am I willing to let go of my need to be understood by that person? In the words of St. Francis, am I willing to just understand? Am I willing to be patient and wait till the mud settles, till my water's clear? What am I willing to pay? And it's a deep wondering, because that willingness to pay has to come from the will. It can't be just, yeah, I'll do that. Can't be in the intellectual center. The willingness to pay to lessen the suffering of this beloved has to come from my emotional center. It has to be deep, deep parts of center. And so that word pay really resonated with me, because this work is so deep and so needed. It's not a Venmo thing here. This is like true coming to grips with the reality of things. So that's been on my mind, that deep longing to understand and to, I was raised Catholic, and the notion here is maybe one of sacrifice. What am I willing to sacrifice? That's a good word for payment. And so it's a wondering. It's a wondering.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing just a little bit of understanding of the pain of those family dynamics and the payments, the pain and the payment that is required. So it's very powerful work, place of work, tender spot. Thank you for sharing. Hold that. Let's go to Karen, please.
Thank you, Peter. Hello, everyone. And it must be your birthday time. So happy birthday, Peter. Oh, my goodness. I'm so grateful for this work, that the things that stood out to me were those last three sentences or phrases about getting the knowledge, and especially the second one is getting a will for transformation, which I've put into wishing for a new attitude. As I've noticed, my will has been very reluctant and and it just, you know, nothing happens. So seeing that and reviewing my life from perspective of moving, and in essence, taking the can and dumping the life out in a room and now say rearrange it. I know I'm not the one that rearranges, try as I may to put things together. It's just not my job. So I really do pray for the attitude and the will to be open and willing to have my life's direction led by a higher source. And at times I can feel that, at times I can see that, and be so grateful for it and feel the relief that it gives me. You know, I am,
Okay, we've lost you, Karen. Lauren, you had your hand up a moment ago. Do you want to share, Lauren Stell? Lauren?
I was very taken with the writing in the old that was mentioned of another couple of years ago treatment of the first striving, and I think it was, I can't remember who the who explored it. But I think it was Bennett or Bennett's son or somebody. And my gratitude, well, it in food, and I realized that that I don't think enough about it. And so I started thinking about it. And one of the statements in that email was that, you know, we're not sitting by a rock and that's kind of wet. And I remember sitting by wet rocks and various times in my life hiking. And anyway, I started thinking about mushrooms, and one thing led to another. And I found a poem by Sylvia Plath in The Voice of a Mushroom. And I just want to read the beginning and end of it. Mushrooms, overnight, very whitely, discreetly, very quietly, our toes, our noses take hold on the loam, acquire the air. And she talks about nobody sees us and how you kind of have to juggle and joust in order to get out into the air. And she says, nudgers and shovers, in spite of ourselves, our kind multiplies. We shall, by morning, inherit the earth. Our foot in the door. And it felt like to me that that's certainly like my understanding of what this is all about is in the door. But I was very grateful that she could speak as a mushroom, and I could think about the amazing complexity of all the things that we put in our mouths and be grateful again for it all.
Thank you. I believe you're referring to the community practice for this month of eating a new food. So I didn't follow you what you were saying there in terms of the connection to strivings, but were you referring to one of the strivings or the practice of eating food? You're muted. You're still muted.
All right. You couldn't hear me? Is that what was happening?
No, I just didn't follow you at first. I didn't make the connection.
Yes, it was the first striving. and all the things that we put in our body, and thinking about how complex the food has become over the millennia that the little organisms developed, some of which are like mushrooms.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Thank you. Anyone else wish to share from our homework? We have time for one more or two, if there is the wish to share. Marcia, please.
Yep.
Well, you were there and now you're gone. Marcia, you want to share?
Yes, now can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I also focus primarily on the first driving this week, and it has actually led to me radically changing my life. At first, I realized that I did not have everything really necessary because I had quit exercising a couple of years ago, and it had diminished, and I was down to just a very few yoga stretches. And so as a result of this, I started, I'm retired and I live alone, so I can keep my own hours. I started getting up every day 3 hours earlier than I had been, and necessarily then going to bed 3 hours later. But I now go out and walk in the mornings at 6 a.m. And I have also started lifting weights again and riding a bike. And this is drastic for me. I have body-wide pain and fatigue from many physical conditions. And at first I hurt a lot, and I've had to make a lot of adjustments, but I've been able to do that. And I'm very happy to report that I am still doing that every day but one. I had a doctor's appointment. And then it came to my attention from reading more about in the email that about when enough is enough. And that also I tend to be a perfectionist, and I work a lot on primarily on the knowledge aspect of the work. And I have really started putting some limits on the amount of time I spend on that aspect, and trying to spend more time on the applying the work more to myself rather than. So for me, this has been a really drastic change in my life, and I so appreciate this. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia. That's heartening to hear. And also enjoy the mornings and the influence they convey, and good for you for working out.
Thank you.
Yeah, may your body be blessed and touched with continued healing.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to share before we conclude? With one last opportunity to share. Maybe someone who's never shared before or who's reluctant to share, it's a good time to work on oneself. Kevin.
I'm one of those people who hasn't shared before. Maybe I shared once or twice, but in this setting. I'm new with the strivings and everything, but this second striving and fourth striving, I think, were complementary this week in trying to practice self-observation in dating situations, which is something that's been recent in my life, starting back up again after taking some time off from that. And I ended up in this situation where I was awaiting a response from one person, and on the other end of that with another person, just like starting these different connections that I'm exploring. And in my waiting for the response from this person, I neglected a response to this person, and was blind to that situation. And so in terms of the second striving, there was a moment of waking up and needing to see where I was in relation to this person that was waiting on me. And this payment, I had to look up the root of that because pay is, my camera's being goofy, but pay is a difficult word loaded in finances and things like that. But the root of it, I never knew this before, is pax or posh, like peace. And it's to make peace with, is to make a payment, an appeasement. And so I needed to, in my terms that I use, make an amends and own where I was blind and harmful. And that seems more practical. Like, it is my arising. I got a little inch of consciousness there of the duty I owe to other people when I get involved with them. And that's definitely an arising. And I needed to do that as quickly as possible, or else I would have had these ideas spinning out like my curls here. that was my experience this past week.
Thank you, Kevin. Yes, very practical, very personal example, and kind of humbling, isn't it? Good work. I don't mean to make light of it, but Gertie's six striving steps, date one person at a time.
That's great advice. Luckily, multiple with boundaries, but yeah, choosing to move towards one now. Yeah.
Well, bless you, Kevin. And thank you, everyone, for sharing and being on the journey. We'll shift now to today's email subject on the theme of salvation as transformation. And I'm going to share my screen. And hopefully that's, you're seeing that now. These are big words, obviously. You know, what do we mean by these words? That'd be a good place to start. And I'm not going to go into too much of that because the email goes into a little bit about the word salvation. And the idea of transformation is the idea of metamorphosis, which the butterfly symbolizes. But we've talked a lot about that in the past, so I'm just going to skip over those words and encourage you to study for yourself those meanings. But I thought I'd begin with the big question, you know, what gets transformed? What is this transformation? Can be answered by another question, what gets transformed? And so we can learn about what transformation is by asking the question, what's getting transformed? And in the work, there's a lot of things that get transformed. And so here's my top seven things that get transformed in the teaching of the work as I understand it. The first big one is our personality. The next big one is our knowledge and our being, which obviously then affects our understanding. Knowledge plus being equals understanding. But our knowledge and being can get transformed. Our multiplicity, the doctrine of the multiplicity of our personality or our multiple eyes, the 956 or so eyes that the work says that the human being has. The notion that there's a legion in us, and a legion could be up to 2,500 people in the Roman army. So it's a lot of different aspects. So the multiplicity gets transformed. Our sleep and mechanicalness gets transformed. And this is a core thing to what the work accuses us of being asleep. It doesn't accuse us of sin, it accuses us of being asleep, as Maurice Nickel so beautifully summarizes. If you read the email today, and if you haven't, I encourage you to read it, and to see the contrast between the words that Christianity accuses us of. In other words, what's wrong, with human beings in the work and what's wrong with human beings in the Christian understanding. And the work uses the word sleep, that we're sleep and that we're mechanical. Christianity widely uses the word that we're dead in our sins. So there's an interesting contrast between the diagnosis of human nature. Is it asleep or is it dead? And to me, if you think about it, there's not much difference between the two, actually, in terms of what you can do when you're asleep and what you can do when you're dead. When you're asleep, you don't know you're alive. And when you're dead, you don't know you're alive. When you wake up, it's as if you're coming to yourself again for the first time. And when you go to sleep, there's no guarantee you wake up, and you don't even know if you would not wake up if you went to sleep, deeply asleep. Obviously, dreaming is happening when we're asleep, and so that's different than death. But the large point of the analogies, both sleep and death, is that our will is enslaved when we're asleep or when we're dead, that something about our will is lost or just mechanical when we're asleep or when we're dead. And so there's something about this that needs desperately to be transformed in order to be saved from ourselves, that the will is involved in this process of waking up and being raised to life. Another thing that gets transformed in the work teaching is a big one, and that this is very practical for all of us on a day-to-day basis, is our negative thoughts and emotions and how sneaky those are in our lives. And we're each drawn to particular types of negative thoughts or emotions. So some of us need to be transformed in certain areas and others in others areas. Some of us have negative thoughts about our body image. Some of us have negative thoughts about another person and we're jealous of them. Some of us have shame. Some of us have jealousy, and on, you can see the differences of how these negative thoughts and emotions can be transformed. And then our affect, our physical body and the language of our face and how we express our emotions or don't, our tics, our annoyances. The body has a mind of its own and a memory of its own. The body keeps score, and also the body announces what's going on in us. Even for the best people who try and think they're acting and are able to control their facial expressions, this is something that all of us can work on to be transformed, our affect and our body language, so that there's coherence. And lastly, one of the things that is the most mysterious thing in the work to be transformed, and perhaps is a very much a lifelong process, is our time body work. The past and the future can be transformed, which is greatly a great mystery, but also something that many of us have experienced, or at least had moments of discovering something's been transformed in the past and something is occurring in the future because of what we're doing now. So these are seven of the biggies, I think, in the work of things that get transformed in us. And I thought we'd just go through and illustrate each one at a time. So personality gets transformed. How does personality get transformed? Personality becomes passive. It's not that it goes away completely, but it can become passive. And I thought I'd just stop the share for a second and open the floor to see if anyone wants to give an illustration how you have been transformed in your personality and how you've seen it made become passive. And a really good illustration of this is what happens in the aging process. And I don't know if you've had an elderly grandparent in your life who had a particular personality, and perhaps it wasn't the most pleasant personality. And as they age and get older, and there they sit at the family table at Thanksgiving, and they're not saying anything. And why is that? It's the personality has shrunk or become passive for various natural reasons. So it's a good analogy that it does happen through the natural aging process, that people's personalities goes passive. And of course, that can be sped up through things like Alzheimer's, which can also activate personality in unique ways too. But anyone else want to share an illustration of how your personality's gone passive? Bob, are you wanting to give us an illustration? Okay.
Yes, I'll try to do that. Because I have a very firsthand intimate knowledge of an aging senior personality, and that is my own, which in the last year has undergone is undergoing right now a back to basics transformation, in the sense that I'm coming to terms with mortality in a very real sense, and recovering from the treatment for prostate cancer, radiation and hormone therapy, which I had for 6 months. So what I'm trying to do is to not become more passive in that sense, but to actually become more active in that first line of striving. But there's an acceptance, and I guess that's what my illustration is, a real deep sense of humility and mortality, and the fact that, I don't know, there's a 10% chance that, you know, 5 years from now, things would be very different, but there's also a 10% or a 90% chance that everything is cool. So I don't know, I'm in a mystery, and I've let go to a certain degree of my desire to nail it down, to have it certain, to have myself know where I'm going and where I'm coming from. It's not turbulence, but there's a lot of circulation.
Yeah.
So it's not it, but it's not passive in the sense of all of a sudden my obnoxious personality has just evaporated. It's still there, I'm afraid, but it has less of a hold, less identification.
Amen. Thanks for sharing. And, you know, for a lot of people, having a sickness or a diagnosis is a shock that does significantly dial down the personality in certain ways and opens up new aspects of the self that you're describing. So. Thank you, and bless you. Cammy, please.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for that question. That really wakes up for me, taking this back to the homework. I was struck by the fifth striving too, because as a teacher and a coach, so much of my early life was forming my confidence and my knowledge, accumulating knowledge and developing a confidence in my ability to impart knowledge and share knowledge and guide people. And the work has given me so many gifts to quiet the necessity of my influence in being present to others, and really just opened up to just creating the conditions under which people can do their own self-development. And, while that was a kind of theoretically given to me as a coach, the work has given me so many skills to lessen personality, lessen ego, and just really deeply trust the ability of the other that I'm working with alongside, reflecting back to, having confidence that they are going to, that God will come into and be revealed as a ray of creation through them, and in a way I couldn't have even imagined. So it's felt for me really wonderful to experience the joy. Really, for a while in my youth, letting go of personality just felt like giving up a lifesaver, you know, a buoy that was holding me up, and now it just feels just immensely free.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. Great illustration, vocationally and in how that manifests. I mean, when we're younger, there's this thought that what else is there except personality? And so how, you know, why would we step out into the nothing? The personality is all we've got. So now we know different. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. Dennis, and then we're going to have to move on, Barbara, but we'll be opening the floor for other questions too. So Dennis, if you can be real brief.
Yeah, I was, Peter, you were talking about older people, and I was a couple years ago before my mom passed, I was sitting with her, and of course I could tell you all the things she said and affected me and things affected my personality, developed my personality. And I was sitting with her one time, and she was probably 97 at the time. And I got to thinking, and she was being quiet, and I thought, you know, she probably has no idea about the things that I've been hanging on to and the things that she said. And I'm thinking, I'm the one that's hanging on to those things, and I need to let those things go and just move on, because it's just one of those things where it's like, I need to let that go. And my interpretation of how she was and things she did. And she probably has never even had a clue.
Right. What a grace that is sometimes when the memory just goes, helps us be free. Thank you, Dennis. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have plenty more time to share here. So personality can become passive. That's the first thing that the work teaches. How transformation happens is that slow process of personality becoming passive. Another way of saying that from the Christian perspective is that Christ becomes our all in all, that we are filled with the fullness of God. The second thing that can be transformed is our knowledge and being, and the way that gets transformed, when one way it gets transformed, is that our knowledge and being deepens. And again, being is a mysterious, slippery word. You know, it can mean a lot of different things. I think the word quality of being would be a better way of helping us understand what gets transformed, that the quality of our being and the quality of our knowledge expands or deepens to include aspects that are not our normal way of knowing or a normal way of being in terms of the operational functions of planet Earth. So we get wisdom, we get wise, we get loving. And that's the ultimate quality of being, love. And we know that from St. Paul's teaching when he says, even if you have all the spiritual gifts in the world, and if you have all the gifts of knowledge and wisdom and prophecy and can speak in tongues, blah, blah, blah. But if you don't have love, you're like a noisy gong. You know, you don't make any sense. So the being, quality of being toward love is what can deepen. And that's a significant way we can be transformed. Our knowledge and our being can deepen. I wonder if anyone wishes to share how your knowledge and your being has deepened and been transformed. It might take a moment to just ponder for yourself, how has your knowledge and being been transformed? Anyone wish to give an illustration? How has the quality of your knowledge and the quality of your being changed through the work? If it hasn't, I suggest leave. Roland, please.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. And it's just a really simple idea. It's one of the first things that struck me is I have a right not to be negative. And that really helped my being come alive when I just have the recognition that I don't have to feed these negative emotions, and I have tools through the work to turn away from that negativity and, you know, turn towards the hope that I have in Christ. There's some steps in between that, but I'm really thankful for that knowledge.
Thank you. Roland's iPhone, please. That's different Roland, I guess. Yes, Roland's iPhone. Thank you, Roland. Weider.
Can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Okay, good. Well, I mean, I guess my knowledge and my being has been impacted by the responsibility of being in a journey group. You know, every week I have to be prepared to provide input. And I also gain immensely from the feedback of my journey group partners. And I look forward to it, and it just, you know, it impacts me in surprising ways and helps me to be more empathetic and to just have respect for the varying viewpoints and the vulnerabilities and that are revealed, and all of that just really makes for an immense experience for me.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. I think that's the truth about those small groups, is that's where so much transformation happens in our knowledge and being. And we see it in others. So thank you. And we see when it's not happening in others and or in ourselves, which is very helpful. Yes. So, thank you.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to move on, guys. So just maybe something else will come up for you to share, but we're going to keep moving here to the next one. The way of transformation of our multiplicity happens is that we move from increasing multiplicity or fragmentation to wholeness. And that's a beautiful thing that happens in our lives. And I was just thinking about the different ways in which I've seen that happen in my life. The stupid things I say and the different parts of my personality that show up in different dynamics or situations that I can observe. And I've observed how a lot of them have gone away or gotten much more quiet, and they're in the background and I don't give them the microphone. So that's really, really a very practical thing for us to see. I wonder if anyone wants to give a specific example of how you've been transformed from multiplicity to wholeness, how you've seen that occur in your life. And while you're pondering that, I'll share that I've observed how my multiplicity, when it relates to something that I'm tempted by, a particular thing that's tempted me for a long time, and the temptation comes in the form of an idea or a voice. And in the past, it was never even questioned. It just did it. It just took the bait and I went with that voice or that temptation, gave into the temptation. But these days, I can hear the temptation and I don't even believe it. I don't even give it any energy or attention. It's just like off in the background, like someone in a faraway room in the house. You can hear a voice, but it just doesn't make any sense. And I can see that there's something in me that is increasing in coherence versus multiplicity or fragmentation, at least in that area. Karen, I saw your hand up. You want to give an example briefly?
Okay, thank you, Peter. Well, for me, it's, you know, a brief description is several years ago, I found out, you know, through therapy that, my issue was like a puzzle. And I was trying to put a puzzle together from the brown side. I just didn't have the picture or the information to know that I needed to reverse it, and how much more information I got when I did that. And in a way, I'm still doing that today. And this, my multiplicity has, you know, I really have been on quite this life journey of younger to older, and seeing how much I can, what's available to me, the things I can change to make my life really simpler.
Yeah.
And how often I get in the way and disrupt that. And it makes me tired.
Exactly. Well, yeah. No, good to know. Thank you for sharing it. What a powerful image that is of the jigsaw puzzle. And the thing that came up for me as you're sharing that is every time I self-observe, it turns over the puzzle and I see what the picture is or that puzzle piece. And I can make sense of the puzzle by way of self-observation more and more and more.
Yeah.
Thank you, Karen. We'll go to Don or Deborah, please. And then we'll conclude with Don and Deborah.
Hi, Peter. The heat of the observation of each of these eyes that you're talking about, the heat that comes from turning it over, is something that I've seen that I've learned over the years to start actually like become a heat seeker. I realized that the heat is what melts that into, makes that puzzle, all those different puzzle pieces become one. And the heat also comes from the friction from my desire, the personality's desire to not know, not to look at it. And it says, no, don't look at that. It's okay. Do it tomorrow. And I go, no, now. And that struck, that friction that comes from that yes and no same time is also what leads to the possibility, the more I get used to that, for buffers, you know, these things that keep us from seeing these past transgressions, these past things that we've seen, maybe we completely forgot about. When we get to enough, we get enough of these pieces over, what's this area over here? And all of a sudden the buffer will come down, we get to see it. And some of those are always like, that's what I always do. Oh, and Deborah's like, the buffer? Yes, it's another buffer coming down. And there's the heat that comes back up again, because now when that buffer comes down, it never goes back up again. And that's freedom, and that becomes the wholeness that you're talking about. Each time that happens, those pieces of the puzzle become more and more connected and once and for all.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. That's add that to the list of things that get transformed, buffers. That's really, really good. And it definitely is related to our multiplicity. Thank you, Don. Okay, we'll continue. The next thing that happens that gets transformed is that we get transformed from our sleep and mechanicality to being more awake and conscious. And of course, that sounds fairly simplistic and self-explanatory, that our sleep, we get awakened from our sleep. That's how the transformation happens. And the opposite of mechanicality is more consciousness, placing our consciousness more consciously in whatever we're doing. But this is a big area for all of us, and to see where we're asleep. It's oftentimes hard to see when we're asleep because we're asleep. And so we only see our sleep when we're awake. So this becomes a really tricky thing. So I'm wondering if anyone wishes to share your experience or illustration of how you've been transformed in the area of sleep, how you've observed how you've been asleep and how that's been transformed. Perhaps you've been asleep in a particular area of your life. I guess Barbara Risser.
Hi. So first of all, I want to introduce the value of the Enneagram, both for the very first thing about personality, revealing to you your own personality. And then the other is Father Keating's programs for happiness, because that's a wonderful way to uncover your mechanicalness. So I like those two sources of knowledge to address both those two things.
Yeah, wonderful tools. Amen. Supplemental into that. Thank you, Barbara. Yeah. Anyone wish to give an example of how your sleep has been transformed or your mechanicality been transformed? Okay, how about eating potato chips? Mechanically eating potato chips to be transformed to see oneself eating potato chips. So now I eat potato chips, but I know that I'm eating potato chips. It's a simple illustration, but there is a lot of mechanicality and sleep in our lives, in our bodies. David, please.
Yeah, for me, it's cookies, Peter.
not as many cookies and much more conscious as I am eating them. And it turns out I enjoy them more.
Yes.
You know, but the other thing I wanted to share about this particular item is that what I've experienced in practicing self-observation of, you know, regular habitual things that show up in my personality is that early in the work, I would have to observe, you know, I'd make the observation well after the fact in reflection. And as I practiced more and more with the tools of the work and self-observation, that time between the self-observation and the actual mechanical I acting out got shorter and shorter, to the point now that for at least an awful lot of those automatic reactions, the observation is there even before it can react.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a beautiful example of transformation right there. To be transformed in that area, you're more awake. Thank you, David. Catherine, we're going to move on, unfortunately. Stay tuned, see if something else arises that you wish to share. The next thing is we our negative emotions and negative thoughts are transformed by becoming more and more non-identified with them and free from our negativity. And this, when this begins to happen, it's like you're walking on water, really, and not getting sunk into the negativity of the emotional thought or feeling. And non-identification and that freedom are really signs of profound transformation on a practical level. So anyone wish to share an example of that non-identification, that journey to transformation of the negative emotions by being non-identified with something, how you've been transformed and saved from yourself in the area of non-identification of negativity? Sabrina.
Hey, Peter. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I see myself very differently this year since I've started this journey school and the silent prayer and the work. And, you know, I've had clinical depression, which comes with very negative thoughts. And, you know, it took me all these years of therapy and, you know, trying to heal myself, begging God to change me. I wasn't accepting who I was. I was thinking I was supposed to be somebody else, and realizing that I'm unique and uniquely made, and it's my job to be myself, and also becoming present in the moment and realizing all these false eyes. It's helped me so much. And my mind is a lot happier. It's, you know, it's amazing how mean I was to myself with my negative thoughts. The worst enemy, for sure. I'd never treat anybody like that. So I'm just feeling really grateful and blessed.
May it continue. That's transformation right there. Salvation too. So bless you, Sabrina. So we'll just move on.
No, I was going to share.
Consciously embodied versus this kind of unconscious affect of our facial expressions and body language, to be in our bodies consciously and to place our consciousness in our bodies, to be transformed in this area, to be transformed in our affect and to be transformed in our body gestures, is really a fascinating waking up in the body and being in the body, and how much of the body does its thing on its own. So anyone wish to share how you've been transformed and being consciously embodied in your affect and your body expressions. Curious if anyone has ever had any feedback from someone else, you know, saying, I notice you're more happy, or you're smiling, or you're not scowling anymore. Anyone wish to share on this point? James, please.
Yes, I, at some point in the past year, I don't know if I heard it through our class or another spiritual friend perhaps, but this notion that if I'm leaning forward a lot, if my body posture is forward, that might insinuate that I'm very future oriented and that I'm living in the future. And I've observed that through self-observation a lot over the past year. And it's just reminded me to, you know, to sit up more straight, to keep my chest open and back, and just to abide in the present moment and live from the present moment more. And it's fascinating. I can go back and look at pictures from when I was a child and sitting with my siblings, and I'm forward. You know, I have this neurotic attachment to the future, and so I'm really grateful to just have these moments to remember, just to lay back and just to let life come to me more than me forcefully willing myself into the future.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. Beautiful illustration. Being transformed in this little area of our lives is very fascinating, very good work for all of us. We'll wrap up here very briefly with the freedom from our accounts and from our anxiety for the future. And this transformation happens very slowly in our time bodies, but we can forgive and release our accounts that we hold against others, and we can find great freedom from the future and be present in the present without worrying so much. So that's an area where transformation shows up very practically in our lives, forgiveness and peace, that the work idea of doing our time body provides. I want to close with just two scriptures for you to ponder, because when we are in the subject of transformation as salvation, it's very important to remember that we're not just a fourth way school, we're a Christian community as well, that harmonizes the two. And in many ways, the work is Christianity, it's inner Christianity. The work is oftentimes the how for me, in terms of how do I forgive? How do I turn the other cheek? How do I love my neighbor? The work gave me a lot of practical ways, like the seven we reviewed tonight, to do the how. But I never want to lose sight of the ultimate grace of God's abounding presence and love that can heal us in a second without any work at all. And that the beauty of our relating and relationship and in union with God through Christ by the Spirit gives us access to transformation as a gift, as pure, sheer grace. And it may not show up in our lives in full, but little by little it does, and that's called the process of sanctification, which is the Christian theological way of talking about the process of transformation, becoming increasingly infused with the light and love of God, looking more and more like the image of Christ. And this can be found in various passages through the New Testament, and this is one of my favorites. If anyone is in Christ, there is a new creation. The old has gone, the new has come. And that old being gone and that new coming has nothing to do with anyone's work or efforts or aims or anything. It's because they're related to the living Jesus Christ. And that's a radical claim, that this newness, this freedom, this new being, this new quality being doesn't come from anyone's efforts. It comes from the relationship of abiding with Jesus the Christ. And that's profound. And it's not for everyone, but it is something that stands as an invitation to the world. And lastly, along those lines, this beautiful teaching from the Gospel of John, which is the Christian way of talking about, where did it go? Yeah, the Christian way of talking about our transformation process. And I commend this analogy to you of the vine dwelling in the branch dwelling in the vine, being pruned and growing, but the abiding that the vine has with the branch, or the root, and the branch isn't producing fruit on its own; it's producing fruit because of the union with the vine and the root. And this beautiful passage in John chapter 15 is very humbling for all students of the work to be reminded of this grace that exists as a pathway to spiritual transformation and salvation. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, Abba takes away, and every branch that bears fruit, Abba prunes, that it may bear more fruit. You are already open because of the word which I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I abide in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. It's a gorgeous call to relationship. And even though we don't always understand the mystery of the gospel or even of God, and it's easier sometimes to just stay with the practicality of the work psychology, the spirituality of the gospel of Jesus is calling us to a deep place of surrender and letting go of self. And lastly, just a reminder, if you're wondering what Christianity's premise is in terms of salvation and the transformation process, the whole Gospel of John, which is the most beautiful and esoteric of the Gospels, concludes with this basically telling the secret. This is the reason I've written this book. Now, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written so that you may come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Christ, the Son of God, and that through believing you may have life in his name. It's that beautiful invitation to believe, to have a different quality of life. And that stands as a radical invitation for the world. What will you make of it? And how will it change your life? The homework for this week is fairly straightforward. If you're not familiar with Ted Nottingham, and just explore him, he's a beautiful teacher of the work from a Christian tradition. And Thomas Keating's video also is so beautiful as a way of articulating some of these ideas. And so do look at the homework in the email and apply it to your life and see how psychologically and spiritually seeking, you're seeing sleep in your life. And in particular, how holy remembering is helping you awaken this year. So have fun with that. And I thank you for sharing, everyone, and wish you all a peaceful evening.
Thank you, Peter. And thank you to everyone present and everyone who shared. We close our time in prayer as we move into the night and pray together. The prayer of God's love, that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully, and how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep, rest in Christ's peace. Amen.